Blog Talk Radio.
Is on bad behavior this morning. This is welcome to Talkie-Pi. This is Annie Lindstrom. If you have not listened to the show before, Talkie-Pi is about people who do good things for community and make the world a better place. Please visit TalkiePie.net where you'll find my blog, photos, videos, and show notes, as well as archives of more than 130 shows done since 2012. You can also click on the contact tab to send me listener mail. And that's always welcome. I'm grateful for your feedback as I do this show for you, so please don't be shy. Write in your comments or suggestions for future guests. You can also reach me on Twitter at TalkiePie_radio, and that's a good place to join us and get notifications of shows that are coming up. Also, we've had some pretty good shows on environmental issues in the last couple of weeks, and just started off the year with an interview with Art Tandrup of a farmer in Nebraska and a no KXL activist. It was really awesome. That was Tuesday night, so be sure and check that out. It was his second time with us to talk about all the stuff that's been going on. Also, I guess we'd be remiss if we didn't mention that today is Martin Luther King Day, and there's a lot of activity going on today to kind of straighten out the record on Martin Luther King, who he was, what he did, and what he did not do, and why he's important to our country. So hopefully everybody's going to have a chance to learn some more about Martin Luther King today. Also, I want to, before we start, thank Ronald Jenkes for his song Disorganized Fun, which is the Talkie-Fi theme song. Check him out at Ronald Jenkes, JenKees.com. Now we're going to get on with the show. I want to introduce my guest, who is Heather DeMayen. She is in Ferguson, Missouri. Welcome to the show, Heather. How are you doing this morning?
I'm actually in St. Charles, Missouri, but I spent a lot of time in Ferguson and in St. Louis. So
I was going to say, you could have fooled me.
Yeah.
Because you're always there. But that's fine. Heather's been on Twitter, and of course I've seen her from all the events going on in Ferguson, and she's also a disabled person, and she works and does her live streaming and her life from a wheelchair. And she has been tweeting quite vociferously on the Stop Ableism hashtag. And I've been learning so much from the Stop Ableism hashtag that I just decided to invite her on the show. And there's other hashtags, too. You have to tell us what they are. But I just thought it was really important because I think a lot of people don't always know what ableism is or how to, you know, act when they're around people that are different than they are, you know, in ways that just are different and, you know, doesn't make them any less human. But I just thought it would be a great opportunity because Heather's really been spitting out a lot of the knowledge. So just so glad you could join us to talk about this topic today, Heather. And why don't we just start with talking about what is ableism, and I'm going to spell it for everybody, ableism. What is that?
Yeah. It's like racism, sexism, it's an ism, it's, discrimination, institutional or, you know, personal prejudice against people with disabilities, and it could be against, you know, a specific type of disability, or against anyone who has, you know, anyone who is part of the nearly 20% of the U.S. population that are people with disabilities. We're the largest minority group in the U.S. And we've had a number of civil rights bills over the years, like the Rehabilitation Act of 1973 and the Fair Housing Act of 1988, but the Americans with Disabilities Act is really the most well known and has the greatest impact on the, you know, on the on the private business sector, as well as local and state governments that didn't receive funding, you know, and so weren't affected under the Rehab Act.
Can I ask you a question? When was that? When was the American Disabilities Act passed? When was that passed?
It was signed into law on January 1990. So it'll be 25 years old next week, or in 10 days, I guess. Or
and what did it? What did it do? What did it do? What was the thrust of that act? Was it to make sidewalks accessible and elevators and stuff like that, or what? You know, what was the main thrust of that act?
Those are parts of it, but it also, that accessibility is a huge part of it. You know, and making sure that there are, you know, accessible parking spaces with access aisles that you can actually get your wheelchair out of your vehicle with, you know, or braille signs, or making sure your bathrooms are a minimum of 5 foot by 5 foot to fit a wheelchair in it, and or ramping single, you know, you have a one step on a building. There is no excuse on any business in 2015, for any business that has one or two steps to not have them ramped. It's been, it's been almost 25 years, and, when I see a business that, you know, could very easily have ramped that step any time in the past 25 years, you know, that step, you know, says, you know, it basically it's a sign that says no cripples allowed. It's telling me I don't want to share. It's Jim Crow, and you know, and it happens all the time, and there's constantly new, you know, construction being put. There's even with the laws, there are brand new construction that violates those laws all the time.
Right.
Like the Fair Housing Amendments Act. Like the Fair Housing Amendments Act of 1988. Requires that all apartment buildings with four or more units built after 1991 have to have accessible first floor units, accessible rental office, things like that in common areas. And I used to do projects with some groups when I was in Kansas City, and I tested apartments across the state in St. Louis, Missouri, in St. Louis, Columbia, Kansas City. 90% of the post-1991 apartment buildings that I tried to, I could not get into the rental office. There were steps to the first floor apartments. Like 90% of them were in violation of the Fair Housing Amendment.
So, we have to stop here and mention, because I didn't mention it at the top, but that you've been an activist for a long time, you know, especially when it comes to ableism, and that you jumped in quite, you know, vigorously into what's been going on in Ferguson, and that you're a big live streamer there. I mean, you're famous. I'm not on my game this morning
that.
For some reason.
I told you that on the street. I don't know that I believe it, but okay. But,
You're well known, girl. You're very well known.
I've heard that. Okay. My role in Ferguson, my role, R-O-L-E or R-O-L-L, when I first went there on August 10th, I went there to be, you know, part of the vigil, and then the police attacked us with dogs and then confronted us with tear gas masks. So I just started filming them. And I'd actually been filming police before that. I was arrested for filming the police at the Trayvon Martin protest in the summer of 2013 for filming police on the sidewalk. So I've done this for a while, but, you know, I'm trying to document what's going on, even if my presence with the camera doesn't, help incentivize the police to be more well behaved. I at least have, you know, documented evidence of what they to show the world, show history, just have the documentation, whether it's for a court case or just for knowledge. I have protesters call me and say, can you please come live stream? We're nervous when there's live streamers here to keep an eye on the police and stuff.
Right.
And I don't know that I actually protect them in any way, but I document.
Exactly. But you've been documenting. I guess why I brought it up now, I want to stick to the ableism and get to the live streaming later, but I didn't want to miss that in the beginning.
Yeah.
But you've been documenting all these violations also. I mean, you've been using your camera to document the ableism issue, most of your life too, because you've been facing it and you've been fighting it as an activist way before Ferguson. So it was kind of a natural that you would come out with your camera. So I know that on the slideshow that we have a lot of pictures of streets, and like the one that I really like, it's just astounding, is the disabled parking, and like it points down this huge flight of stairs and then a ramp that goes straight up into an apartment building and stuff like that. But the Americans for Disabilities Act, it's not just people in wheelchairs. I mean, it's definitely blind people. No. It's people that are deaf. It's people that...
People with mental illnesses, because it's not just about physical access. It's about, if somebody with, who has cerebral palsy, even if they don't use a wheelchair, sometimes people with cerebral palsy or other types of disabilities that make them appear to others, I'm trying to word this correctly.
Right.
When a restaurant owner says, ask you where your caregiver is, that type of paternalism doesn't necessarily have anything to do with whether the business is accessible. I could go in, somebody with cerebral palsy could go in their wheelchair into the business and get in, but then because there's an article about that recently, I think it was in the UK, and then the staff at the restaurant was like, where's your caregiver? You can't be in here by yourself.
Let's clear about cerebral palsy. A lot of people don't realize, that's a disease that attacks your body and not your mind. I actually know a guy who was brought into the world and parented by two people with cerebral palsy. And, you're going to think, well, where's your caregiver? Because you can't walk around. But, some people don't even be in wheelchairs. They can walk into a place like that and then get that kind of treatment.
Yeah.
Cerebral
palsy is a neurological, it's not a disease, it's a neurological disorder. It's often caused by a mild brain injury at birth or possibly like cutting off the oxygen to the brain. There's actually a number of things that can cause it.
Right.
And it can affect, it can cause, very mild symptoms, or it can cause, somebody can have to have 24-hour care, may need 24-hour care, but that's, the decision of the person, what help they need. They have the right to make that decision. Paternalism. One of the, on the Ferguson hashtag, among Ferguson activists and stuff, I have so many trolls blocked. I get a lot of concerned trolls. A lot of my friends get overtly racist trolls. I get concerned trolls, telling me I shouldn't be out in the street.
Oh, wow.
In St. Charles, where there's no sidewalks and I don't have anyone with me, I'm not going out in the street by myself. If I'm with a group in Ferguson or in St. Louis, there's other people there. It's not like a car is nearly as likely to just come out of nowhere and hit me.
Right. Exactly.
There's a difference. There's certain risks that I'll take and certain ones I'm a lot more apprehensive about, but that's my choice. I'm a person and I have the right to make those choices. That's a type of ableism that is often imposed on people with disabilities that has nothing to do with wheelchair access or anything. It's just, people judging, trying to infantilize you and make decisions for you.
Mm-hmm. And what about the one, I want to do let's put some pictures to this, what it looks like, because I think people think, ableism might just be like, well, you know, not having a, you know, not having a ramp or something like that. But definitely what you said, you know, a person with cerebral palsy, you know, walks the way they walk into a restaurant and then, you know, eats the way they eat. And then they're looked at as like, you know, there's paternalism going on there or infantilization and judgment. And like as a person, you know, I, you know, do you want to talk about how you became disabled or do you want to, you know, or, you know, just like what I would say is how do you or other people that you know that are disabled, how does it feel to have those kind of things, you know, put down on you, have people treat you, you know, like you want to be treated right, but you don't want to be treated special, right? I mean, I would like to get a rope around this, you know, and make it so people understand how they're supposed to act.
I had special gym class. I had the special short bus. That's okay.
Right.
I need the word special. It comes across as condescending. Right.
Exactly. So you it's know, not like there's but there's a way, there's a fine line, you know, between not respecting where you're at and you know, over indulging where you're at. Like you're saying, the concern trolls. What else did they say to you, those people? I didn't know about concern trolls. That's a new one.
Well, you know, people with disability, we're supposed to be, you know, we're not supposed to, you know, drink or smoke or have sex or do any, you know, we're supposed to be cute little fluffy bunnies, and it makes people uncomfortable when we break their stereotypes. We've had these whole conversations about respectability politics among disability rights advocates that parallel, you know, the respectability politics discussions in Ferguson. And there's so many parallels between various civil rights movements. You know, people with disabilities are called angry when we say, hey, there really needs to be a ramp there.
Right.
You know, I'm mad that, you know, I'm up, you know, it's been 25 years, there should be a ramp there. Oh, well, you know, if you just smile and be happy, people will treat you right. No, it didn't work. There's no amount of smiling is going to change that step into a ramp.
Exactly, but yeah. So, and no amount of behaving, and no amount of behaving well is going to change the way people act towards some, you know, some minorities and people who are victims of racism.
I think it's Stella Young. It's a TED Talk. Is a disabled woman. She talks about inspiration porn. And how, you know, people with disabilities are used, you know, to inspire others, and all the problems with this. And there's a segment in there where she talks about how, you know, people tell attitude is the only real disability is your attitude and stuff, and it's like, you know, just be happy. She's like, you know, no amount of smiling at a flight of stairs has ever turned it into a ramp, ever. I stole that from her.
Let me ask you that now that you brought it up, because I'm thinking of a really nice piece of inspiration porn that someone that I like a lot, you know, made a really good piece, because a person came to work for him and, you know, he was had no arms and no legs and just basically, you know, kicked butt around his workplace, and then did a big piece on it, a beautiful film. And it was all about attitude. I mean, when you see something like that, how do you feel? Because, I mean, on the one hand, it is inspiring for people, but on the other hand, it has that whole double edge to it. How do you feel when you see that in other people that have disabilities?
Well, you have to realize when you see something like that, you may not be seeing the whole story. You know, like somebody who has, you know, significant physical disabilities, and that they're, you know, doing something really, you know, public, and that people say, oh, wow, that's so inspiring. Why don't other people, disabled people, do that? You may not realize that behind the scenes he has a support system that other disabled people may not have. You know, there's a lot of people with disabilities who do not have, you know, that need home care. The people with disabilities end up locked up, you know, imprisoned in nursing, quote, homes, you know, when you know, because there's no accessible housing, or because they can't get, you know, they can't get supports because Medicaid and Medicare money is focused on going into nursing homes and not in-home care. And so, you know, so you've got, so there's people, you know, you don't, you may not realize that, you know, that people tell, oh, you're so inspiring and stuff because you're doing all that. Well, you know, the other people may not have, everyone's disabilities are different, and other people may not have access to the same support systems that I have. And you can't really, the whole super crip thing, you know, falls apart when you realize, you know, the amount of work that goes on behind the scenes that's not talked about.
I want to make sure people heard that word you used, super crip.
Oh, super
which is basically like Superman, but like super crippled person.
Yeah.
And
super crip. It's a term that we, you know, that people with disabilities who are fighting for their lives, who are locked up in nursing homes, who are stuck at home because, you know, and can't get out because they don't have any support services and stuff, and they see people with their same disability who have support services, but their services aren't talked about and stuff. And it's like, okay, you know, it's a trope. It's like a Hollywood trope. It's a societal trope. The super crip, you know, the disabled person who can overcome anything just by force of will.
Right.
And,
so it's kind of like
it's an illusion.
Like the super mom, like the super mom. She has like she's a CEO. She has four kids and a husband, and she cooks dinner, and she gives her husband great pleasure in the evening, stuff like that.
Right.
So, you know, and I think that's
going on behind the scenes than what you know.
Right. There's a trope that's a trope that runs through almost all things, you know, and.
Yeah.
That's really interesting. But as you were talking, I was thinking too, you know, about not showing the whole picture, that, you know, there's a whole part of life that maybe someone can master a job, right? You know, but when they go home at night, they might still be isolated anyway, you know, or maybe not.
Mm-hmm.
Like this person may just have had so much, you know, love and care from a family, or, you know, attitude, you know, fitness worked into them, that they just carry that attitude wherever they go. For example, this week I heard a show about a guy who can basically see by clicking like a bat. It was on this Invisibilia show that's new on NPR. And this guy, he basically doesn't, his mom just sent him to school. He learned how to, you know, he was blind, but he learned how to see just by, you know, echolocating, basically. And he can climb trees and go on hikes and all this other stuff. But people would be like, well, why can't other people do that?
Well, he started at an extremely young age.
Right.
He obviously studied at a very young age. That it's like, you know, oh, how could I, you know, I could look at something and go, wow, how do you play the violin that well? And then I, oh, well, you started learning at a very young age. It's, you know, that's.
Or not, or you just learned because you learned. I mean, everybody's different.
You just learned. And that's the thing. It's about adapting. That's one of the things. You know, a lot of abled people are very afraid of disability. You know, disabled people are like the largest minority group in the U.S., but we're also the only one that anyone can join any time in their life. And that's terrifying.
Exactly.
You laugh, but that absolutely terrifies able people.
No, I'm not laughing because of that. I'm laughing because I know.
Able people will tell us to our face, I would rather be dead than have your disability.
Right.
And
you could have it tomorrow.
Our lives and it's, you know, our lives are devalued every day by comments like that. I'd rather kill myself than be you.
What do you say when someone says that to you? How do you deal with that?
That, you know, it depends on the situation and what,
okay,
and how things, you know, it's just this absolute total fear of disability. When,
okay,
you know, there's like the issue of assisted suicide. There's been a lot of propaganda from the Hemlock Society, which is now calling itself Compassion and Choices, to legalize assisted suicide in various states. And,
mm-hmm,
you know, they did that whole thing where they used Brittany Maynard for their agenda. And, you know, and they keep, you know, they had a lot of the liberal media is fooled by this and doesn't realize that when you legalize assisted suicide, when you give doctors the power to violate the Hippocratic Oath,
right,
they will take advantage of it. They try to take advantage of it when they don't have that right. You know, they try to slip do not resuscitate orders in my friend's files when they're unconscious. They try to pressure me into signing do not resuscitate orders. Doctors in general, you know, cops in general don't value black people's lives. Doctors in general don't value disabled people's lives. They can't fix us, and they don't know what else to do, and it pisses them off, and the ableism is so, you know, in Belgium, almost a third of the, quote, assisted suicides there are involuntary. The people,
oh, really?
Who were killed, on, you know, well over, a, you know, I have to check on the updated numbers. Last I checked in New Zealand, there was well over 1,000 involuntary euthanasias under their assisted suicide law. And it's,
wow,
extremely, extremely dangerous. You know, if somebody wants to kill themselves, you know, I'm more concerned about how a law will be used to oppress a large number of people with disabilities than whether a few people who have completely, you know, feel like, you know, need it, you know, their choice of drugs. And want a doctor. There's other ways to kill yourself. You don't need to, you know, create the whole legal system in such a way that people, you know, Jack Kevorkian,
right,
always try. He was, you know, Jack Kevorkian was supported by the Hemlock Society. He was one of their big people, and, you know, three-fourths of his victims were people with non-terminal disabilities. I'm technically terminally ill, have been technically my whole life, but that my life expectancy, you know, research keeps changing and my life expectancy keeps growing by a few years every few years, but
yeah,
you know, they go, oh, you'll be dead by the time you're 30, you'll be dead by this time, and, you know, doctors cannot predict when you're going to die. It never, most people I know who have been disabled since they were kids have had doctors tell them they're going to die at some point, very, you know, long before, yeah, and that, like, long before, you know, how old they are now. And so,
right,
when you set up a system where you're encouraging disabled people to seek assisted suicide while you're telling able-bodied people to go, you know, seek suicide prevention and call suicide prevention hotlines, that's a huge double standard we cannot have it ingrained in our laws, and it's incredibly dangerous. People with disabilities, 300,000 people with disabilities, primarily people with mental illnesses, but, you know, people with physical disabilities that, you know, too, were the first victims of the Nazis, legal under German euthanasia laws. And because we were already subhuman and they killed us off, and it was much easier to just extend that to Jews and everyone else. And people with disabilities, you know, we were the first because we were subhuman, and we were also the last in just a few months ago in 2014 to have a memorial to the first victims of the Nazis finally established just last year.
Where at?
Because we're
Germany?
Subhuman. And
Germany?
We're very well aware of that. Huh?
Where's the memorial? Is it in Germany or in the U.S.?
I think it's in the U.S. I'll have to double check on it. But But yeah,
okay.
It was,
that's interesting.
There was an article
about it
in September. Yeah, that's good that they finally did that.
No, we don't need to know that, right? That's a detail. But I figured it was probably in Germany. But you're bringing up mental illness, so I read an article this morning about the young man who was killed by police in the movie theater, you know, because he wanted to watch a movie again today.
Ethan Taylor, he had Down syndrome.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And he was let off to watch a movie. He watched the movie and he wanted to go watch it again. And for some reason, the theater people called the police, and then the police came, and then they begged him not to kill the guy, but they killed him anyway for wanting to watch a movie again. I mean, that's kind of like you were saying. I mean, it can be deadly to be disabled, you know, when it comes to involvement with police. And then there's also Kajemi Powell. Yeah. Who was shot, you know, the day of, you know, the death of his mother, and, you know, just for acting a little bit off. So it's just like when you said anybody can end up in that situation. I mean, who doesn't have a family member or know somebody who has some kind of mental, you know, disability at some point in life, you know, or whatever. And the reason I was laughing is because I used to sell insurance, so I know darn well how people can end up very dead or very disabled by the end of the day, you know. And there's a certain immediacy to explaining that to people and so forth. But let's talk a little bit about mental illness, because that's a disability that people typically, in many cases, cannot be seen. It's the invisible one. So, let's talk a little bit about that.
Although Ethan Taylor had Down syndrome, it was quite obvious he had Down syndrome.
Right, but that's not really a mental illness. That's an intellectual disability.
It's under that umbrella.
Disability
and mental illness, and the mental disability kind of encompasses both.
That's interesting.
The monument's in Berlin.
Okay.
So.
That makes sense. But yeah, so it took him a while. Great. 2014, that's pretty crazy. But anyway, back to the mental illness. What about, you know, I know that Kajemi Powell, I got to confess, I can't watch those videos because I'll never not stop watching him in my head. I have one of those heads that if I see something, it never leaves my head until I die. So I just, you know, it's bad enough what's in my head just from reading about it. But I know that video, you know, he went to a convenience store, came out with a couple of items and supposedly some kind of knife, and the cops rolled up and just shot him, basically.
the police, before they knew about the video, the police said he was within 3 feet of them and had a knife in overhand grip. That is not what the video shows whatsoever.
Right.
And no one has ever seen this alleged knife. Police have never produced it. You know, when it first happened, it was very shortly after Mike Brown, and there were people on the scene who started putting their hands up, and you know, and the man who filmed it is very active, you know, in the protests now, and you know, because you know that was like life changing for him to see something like that, You know, the police chief tried to make, you know, he put up this big show. He did a press conference right away. He tried to act like he was going to be all transparent. And then, you know, it was like, oh, he was within 3 feet, had this knife in an overhand grip.
Right.
And then the next day, video comes out, completely trashes that. It is believed that we know the names of the police who killed him because of, you know, anonymous, but the St. Louis Police Department still to this day have never released the names of the police who killed him 151 days ago.
But I mean, back to the, I mean, obviously that's a whole, there's so many parts to this, and I really want to have you on again. I want to do taking questions from a chat room or something, because I think really this is such a big topic. So if it seems like we're driving all over the road here, everybody just bear with us. But I want to get back to the deal that he was, go ahead, honey.
Oh, well, one thing I wanted to point out about Kajemi, you know, I keep trying to, you know, trying to get recognition of this point. And under Missouri, you know, Missouri law, I've worked for a long time in Missouri to help keep assisted suicide illegal in Missouri. I testified against it in the late 90s, you know, for a long time. Anytime, you know, people tried to bring it up, you know, people with disabilities had to go and testify to oppose it. And it is illegal under Missouri to assist, you know, help someone commit self-murder, which, you know, the police, you know, the chief of police said that Jimmy Powell committed
suicide by cops.
Because Jimmy Powell said, shoot me. Well, there's video of a white guy with a gun.
Yard.
Down by police for 40 minutes. He told the police to shoot him, and the police said, no, I don't want to do that. Why didn't they do that to Jimmy Powell? He said, shoot me. Police shot him when he was not an imminent threat. That's assisted suicide. That's a violation of Missouri law.
Wow.
You know, and
but it also goes to, we have to talk about where that came from. I mean, he was in mourning. He had just lost his mom, I believe, you know, not a few hours before that. I think it was his mother. And, you know, he was not in, you know, it wasn't even that just he was mourning. I mean, he had, you know, some mental issues anyway. So, you know, it's
50% of people killed by police have mental disabilities.
Mm-hmm.
Almost 50% of them.
That's, right.
You know, when I did the math, it came out to almost every 17 hours.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's amazing. So it's even more. It's even shorter time frame than the 28 hours for a black person. To be.
It's not a competition, and there's a lot of intersection. You've got Kajimi Powell, Dontre Hamilton, you know, and then you've got physical disability. When you got Eric Garner, his disability, his death was blamed on his physical disabilities instead of the cop that choked him to death.
Yeah. That's true.
That's what the intersection of ableism in the Black Lives Matter tends to come, you know, when their deaths are blamed on their disabilities rather than on the police that killed them. It happened with Kajimi Powell, happened with Eric Garner, you know, it happened. It happens to people, you know, who are white who have mental disabilities, you know, like Kelly Thomas, you know, he got beaten to death by cops and because he was mentally ill. And, you know, people with mental illness are, you know, a particular risk for police and people with other types of invisible disabilities too. Epilepsy in particular is one that's often mistaken for public intoxication or, you know, Or
Tourette's
behavior.
Tourette's syndrome.
Tourette's syndrome.
There was a guy on a channel that I heard this week that said that the cops were called on him. He was basically, he had Tourette's syndrome. He had been working as a teacher. He got laid off for some stupid reason, and he was at some convenience store just standing there drinking his Coke and eating a sandwich, and the cops rolled up on him and said, are you causing problems or something like that? Just because he was having his tweaks, you know? And he was like, no, I'm fine. And they left him alone. I'm pretty sure he was white. Mm-hmm. But like you said, you know, if he hadn't been. So there are all these other diseases that can get you in trouble for nothing.
Disabilities. Disease implies some kind of, you know, virus, bacterial infection, cancer.
So epilepsy, So you would say that I would be...
a neurological disorder.
It's a disorder, so it would be wrong.
It's
all right,
a neurological disorder.
Okay.
It has to do with electrical impulses in the brain. Deaf people get brutalized by police all the time. The ACLU has a specific section on police brutality and deaf people. Because you're not responding to orders, beep, beep, beep. There's been deaf people who've been shot because they did not hear the police's orders.
Yeah, and I that just happened this year, or as one case that I remember hearing about. Let's back up just a little bit, though, to get back into the broader topic of ableism, and maybe not the extreme end result being death by cop or authority
or
authority figure.
Or doctors.
Yeah,
we're going to be on the death for a minute. When people with disabilities, especially children with disabilities, are killed by their family members, the family members that are sympathized with and considered mercy killings, and you know, oh, you got rid of that burden that you had, and you know, they're in a better place. That you know, that they're rarely prosecuted. You know, kids with autism, cerebral palsy, spina bifida, I mean, all kinds of disabilities get killed by family members all the time. There's a national day of mourning. I can't remember exactly what day it is. I know it's sometime in the next couple months. The national day of mourning, where they list the names of people with disabilities who were murdered by their families and stuff. And the families are sympathized with, that's how deep ableism goes, and there's just not even a concept about that among a lot of people.
No, not at all. You know, and it's anything off the norm. Even people who are victims of sexual abuse, you know, they have no one to tell something happened to them, and they become mental disorders result from that kind of thing as well.
Disabled women and girls are exponentially more likely to be sexually abused than an abled girl, like several times more. At least, I think it's at least two and a half times more likely, at least.
Wow. They have less of a voice. I mean, you have less of
they
a
have
voice.
Less of a voice. People may not believe them. They don't, or you know, it's their caregiver who's doing it, and they don't have anywhere to go. You know,
they may not have another option.
It happens in group homes and nursing homes and institutions and sheltered workshops and, you know, places where people with disabilities are segregated. I mean, it happens a lot.
Well, let's talk about nursing homes just for a minute, because I'm thinking about the date of the passage of the American Disabilities Act and thinking, well, that was kind of passed in right in time for the baby boomers to start getting old and feeble and start having, you know, their own issues, you know, that are going to result. And even, you know, because getting into restaurants, all these other things. I mean, how many people are walking in with walkers or, you know, wheelchairs or oxygen and all these other things that really wouldn't have had access if that act hadn't passed? You know, even though there's even though there's flagrant abuses of it, there's, you know, it's a different world than when I was a little girl. There was nowhere for anybody with a disability to go, or a car to drive, or a house to live in, or anything like that.
Well, disabled people were supposed to be included. Hubert Humphrey included disabled people in the Civil Rights Act in 1964 at first, and we got taken out before the law passed. You know, before the law passed, you know, he included us, but then it got taken out before the law passed in 64. And then, you know, like, then we kind of got, like, the Rehab Act in 73, but we didn't get the ADA until 1990. And then, and the, you know, it took, there's photographs of my friends, you know, crawling up the steps of the Congress protesting to get the ADA passed. It didn't happen all on its own.
Right.
It was a lot of hard work, a lot of protests, you know, that got that done. And
yeah.
With nursing homes, the ADA actually does say you have to provide services in the most integrated setting, you know, appropriate to the person, which means, you know, giving them in-home services instead of locking them up in a nursing home. But we had to go to the Supreme Court in 1999 to prove that. And so it's still, you know, even with the law, it still has to be interpreted. It still has to be enforced, and enforcement is, there's no, contrary to popular belief, there is no organization that goes around and approves your business as being ADA compliant. No such thing, doesn't exist. nobody can make that determination outside of a court of law if you're sued.
I see. Interesting. Well, you know, we're down to like the last 15 minutes. I want to talk a little bit about, you know, in a positive note, you know, things that people can do to help and to get educated, you know, to learn more about this. Yeah. And just to actually, like, how can a person, you know, that would consider themselves, you know, abled, even though, you know, I don't know who that group is, but, you know, how can they, you know, learn more and be more aware or do things? Because, like, I know one thing you do, you go around and you send, you're always tweeting pictures of, like, violations where people are on a train and if they were deaf, they wouldn't be able to, or if they couldn't see, they wouldn't be able to know what a stop it is or things like that, or, you know, dangerous, you know, physical things that are in the way of people who might, you know, not be, you know, able to walk around just like it's nothing. But what are things that people can do, and what are some things that you've seen people do that are abled or that are disabled to make things better for the disabled?
Oh, for disabled people or people with disabilities?
People with disabilities, just...
Yeah, it's like,
am I being abled? Am I? Because I mean, I'm stepping out on a limb here. I mean, I'm saying I'm not politically correct at all.
It just comes across as like you generally don't say the blacks,
right?
You know, you would say black people. So.
Yeah, disabled people. All right, excellent.
It's an adjective. There's a noun that goes with it.
No, that's a good point. Hey, I'm an English major. I should know these things. See, I'm putting myself out there for you guys to learn. So there you go. So I will never say it without mentioning the people part again. So that's a good, that's a very good point.
Yeah,
so what,
I mean, I posted an article on my Twitter this morning that had the disabled in the title, and I made sure, you know, I'm putting this whole thing in quotes because that's not my language.
Right. I guess I missed that one, Heather. Darn it. But so let's talk about, I mean, what can people do to help people with disabilities or mental illness? What can we actually do every day?
Learning what ableism is, the Stop Ableism 2015 hashtag has a lot on Twitter, has a lot of just, you know, firsthand statements from people with disabilities that say this is how things affect me and this is why we need to stop ableism. And there's it'll make a lot of people uncomfortable, but
mm-hmm.
you know, it's a good place to learn, to get firsthand accounts and stuff, and you know, and just, you know, engage people as if they're people. You know, don't if you just meet me in person, you know, don't like the first words out of your mouth shouldn't be, "Oh, what's wrong with you?"
Oh my gosh. Tell me people don't say that to you.
Oh, you think they don't. That's cute.
Oh, that's horrible. What's wrong with me? I'm out of money. I don't have enough money to get my breakfast this morning or something.
Or what happened to you? That really shouldn't be the first question. It should, you know, or, you know, just, you know, say hi, you know,
mm-hmm.
walk somewhere with me, see, you know, the, you know, barriers I run into. Educate yourself.
Engage. Right.
You know, you have to try to interact with more disabled people. I know there was a study. I don't know that there's numbers for the U.S., but I would assume they're probably very similar. There was a study in the U.K. where almost like 2/3 of people were uncomfortable interacting with disabled people.
Mm-hmm. Now, why do you think that is? Do you think that's because they're fear or because they haven't been told how to interact? I'll tell you a little story. You know, when I was in junior high, I was put, you know, they were mainstreaming people who had mental disabilities into my junior high school. They never talked to us you know, without the mental disabilities, about how to interact, you know, how to be in mm-hmm. that situation. And there was hostility, you know, mm-hmm. between people and the people who were being mainstreamed, and they were the butt of jokes, and they were treated horribly. And I'd have to say that even in my case, I wasn't, you know, I tried to be a good ally, but I mean, I know that I failed miserably, and you know, I became frustrated too. But I mean, why do you think people don't want to interact? Because also, even at the Goodwill store here, there's a young man with cerebral palsy who will sit at the door and say hello, welcome to Goodwill, to everybody who comes in, to the best of his ability. Mm-hmm. And I always, you know, say hi, you know, thanks, or smile at him, and then.
Okay,
but I have a
question. Do you know how much Goodwill pays him?
Oh, I don't even want to get into Goodwill. I'm talking about his
legally, Goodwill can pay disabled workers as little as 22 cents an hour.
Goodwill is horrible.
Not all Goodwills do that, but they can legally do that. And some of them
I have
do.
No love for Goodwill whatsoever. But I mean, and basically, I was telling the story for the illustration that.
Hold on a second.
Okay,
my
honey.
Dogs are being loud. Hold on.
That's okay. They're loud.
Sorry.
That's
okay.
I was telling the story more for the illustration that, you know, I've sat there, then I've been in there, and people just walk in and they just ignore him, like he didn't say anything. And I just want to go up to him and say, could you just say good morning? You know, could you just say, you know, like when the clerk says hi when you walk in, it's like you usually, I mean, people will roundly just, you know, not acknowledge a clerk, you know, who says hello or welcome to Walgreens or whatever. But I mean, this guy's job is to sit there and say hello to you. Can you just say hi to him? You know, it's like, it just drives me crazy. It's like they won't even engage. They're afraid to engage at that level. So.
Yeah, I know.
It's pathetic. It breaks my heart.
You know, but, you know, that's, you know, he's a greeter. That's his job. He says hi. You say hi back. That's, you know, not, I mean, there are some people with, you know, especially with, certain type, you know, like some people with autism have a lot of trouble interacting socially, and it's very difficult for their disability. But you're talking, you know, the guy you're talking about, that's his job, is to say hi to people.
Yeah.
You know, they should say hi back.
Plus, you're going,
you know,
you're going
that,
into
that,
a Goodwill store.
But the fact that they don't, and, you know, the fact that they don't highlights how extensive the ableism is.
It does.
You know.
Plus, you're going into a store to ostensibly help this guy, right? I mean, theoretically, that's what Goodwill is supposed to be doing.
Theoretically.
But you know it's not. But I mean, what are you just shopping at Goodwill because it's a thrift store? I mean, people have kind of like people have disassembled and detached everything from everything. So it's just like, it's sad. But I mean, I think it gets back to that the main theme that I've been seeing lately in the last month and a half is dehumanization. You know, mm-hmm. the more we can dehumanize prisoners, people of color, people with disabilities, mm-hmm. you know, women. I mean, I grew up during the women's rights mm-hmm. movement. I mean, women today get treated, you know, it's different than it was when I was a kid, but it, you know, kind of reverted back after Reagan. But I mean, I've, you know, watched women fight. It did. That's the day it started. But I mean, it's just, it's like anytime you can dehumanize. And when we say that, it's like the human that we're dehumaning from is usually some paternalistic like idea of what's, you know, the best human being, you know, like a white male.
Right.
So the less you're like a white male, you know, an enabled
Christian white male.
Right. Exactly. In this country.
Enabled Christian straight white male. It's a very specific, subject.
So anything that's off that mark, you know, gets knocked down a bit. And I think, you know, I'm hearing you say that the best thing to do is to engage and to educate yourself by actually getting some things firsthand from people with disabilities, just spending more time mm-hmm. with them and hearing their stories, just listening maybe.
Yeah, just even just listening, just, you know, looking it up online, you know. Some people have criticized the Stop Ableism 2015 hashtag for being angry. If you want to see an angry hashtag, see a tweet like an abled person. You want to see some sarcasm from disabled people.
That can't be a hashtag. Tell me that's not a hashtag.
It is
that's horrible.
A hashtag.
Oh,
it is
no.
A hashtag. Treat like an able person. It is. I've used
no.
it.
Oh. I'm not even going to go there. I can't take that stuff. There's no way. So, and that comes from that inspiration porn. I mean, I think that inspiration porn comment you made, I mean, that is like, that's super poignant to me because I think that, you know, we're always walking these fine lines. And to me, the reason I do this show is because I want more community. I want to have conversations with people because I think we've stopped having conversations, you know, to the point where we can understand that things that are going on are complex. They're not simple and not tied up in a bow in 3 minutes. You know, I have a friend with a autistic child who's, you know, very low function. You know, he's super high functioning in the house. You know, he can do all the things he wants to do, which are, you know, very different than what his parents or family would do. What an average family would do.
Yeah.
See, I'm catching myself. I was afraid to do this show because I was afraid I would look like a really bad person. But I'm putting myself out there because I have issues too. So just so everybody knows,
I even catch myself using ableist language sometimes. I have to police myself sometimes. You know, I have to stop and think. I want to say, you know, something is, you know, idiotic or something, and then I have to catch myself and go, no, that's an ableist term. I need to come up with a different way to describe this. And, you know, it takes a lot of thought process and a lot of consciousness sometimes.
Right. And it's not even being, mm-hmm. it's not even applying it, the knowledge, it's just having the heart to try to be better. I mean, nobody can go through the day speaking perfectly or acting perfectly.
Right.
And
right.
I don't think people should expect that of themselves. I mean, if I was to walk up to someone, you know, who had a visible disability and start asking them questions, I mean, if I came and asked you a question, you know, depending where I'm coming from with that question, you're going to be able to tell. Like, do I really want to know so I can change my behavior or to learn better? Or, you know, if I say, what can I do to help you? Or, you know, instead of just like, let's get into that just for 1 second. Like, say you are in a position where you need to get into a place, but you have no way to get in there. And I'm walking up and I see that you can't get in there. What would be the thing I should do? You know, how should I talk to you?
Is it because there's a step or because the
voice? Yeah, let's say there's a step or anything, you know, anything that I might be able to help you with, you know, or something.
Yeah, if there's a step that at a business that pretty much tells me that they don't want me there.
Right.
Because it's been 25 years, they could have ramped it by now.
But what if you need to get in there and I'm walking up to go in the door and I see you there and you can't get in? What should I do? How should I talk to you?
Well, I might take the initiative and say, hey, I need some help here. Or, you know, you can always offer to help, but don't force it on, you know, if somebody says no, don't keep forcing the issue. Allow that person their autonomy to make those decisions.
So don't grab your chair and turn you around.
Try not to just grab my chair out of nowhere. That can be disconcerting. I appreciate, you know, when people help push me in the marches and stuff, but, you know, if I'm wheeling along and then all of a sudden just somebody just grabs my chair from behind, that's disconcerting and can be a little scary because you don't know who it is because you can't see behind you.
Right. Do people do that? People really do that? I mean, does that happen often?
Oh, yeah. It's happened to me in college. It's happened in marches. I mean, if I'm heading up a steep hill and, you know, and I'm getting a little slow and somebody wants to stop and help, it's really, really nice to, you know, to ask first before just grabbing my chair. Unless you actually see me, you know, like losing traction and rolling backwards down a hill, you know, then you can grab me. But, you know, just ask first.
So basically engage when it's, you know, if you want to help, just engage and say, hey, hi, how you doing? That looks like, you know, something.
You need a hand? And if I say no, great. Well, nice to talk to you. You know, just, yeah. Are you sure? Are you really, really sure? Yeah, I'll carry. No, it's okay. Respect my autonomy, please.
Okay. So it's basically about seeing. It's basically about seeing, which I think, you know, you've done a really good job, you know, with at least what your live streaming activities in Ferguson, you know, of making people see you as, you know, a human, you know, that's, you know, doing things and that also people can assist when they need to assist you. And, you know, I remember there's one time you needed help and there was a march and wasn't there elevator that a place that got closed down and then they had elevators were stuck or something like that. I think
yeah,
I recall
the police shut off the elevator and it broke
in the mall, right? Yeah,
mall.
And then you were inside and everybody else had left and it was just like it was heartbreaking, but you know,
yeah, it was frustrating. It was frustrating, and you can see on the live stream a lot of times you can, you know, you probably heard it on the live stream a number of times, and I have to say the shortest distance between two points is never accessible when I'm taking, you know, when people decide to go up, you know,
right,
go up a curb or something go down, go through some grass, and then, like, I have to take a route that's like six times longer just to get to where they are.
Well, do you think... Do you think that your involvement has been an education for a lot of people? Have people actually told you, wow, I've really learned a lot from you being out here with us,
Some people have, not quite as many as I would like, but it's a process.
Uh-huh.
It's a process.
Right. Well, do you think they might feel put off to say it, too? They might just want to treat you as an average person, you know, just is similar. But I think, you know, dialogue, I always encourage dialogue, you know, and I know that you're the kind of person that, you know, you would tell someone, hey, you know, you probably don't want to say that, you probably want to say this, like you've done with me. So I mean, that's, you know, when you're open to that, you know, you can have those conversations. And I think the conversations are way more important than just pretending there's nothing going on at all,
right?
You know, so you know, definitely something you want to do. I want to tell this story before we go of, you know, one time I was at a concert in Soldier Field in Chicago. This is years and years and years ago. You'll know why, because it was Leonard Skinner, Journey, and Ted Nugent, believe it or not. And when Nugent played, there was someone threw a water bottle. You could bring water bottles, whatever you wanted, to a concert back in the day. And everybody brought gallon milk jugs filled with water, right?
Yeah.
So at one point, someone threw one toward. So what's that?
They brought them to throw them at Ted Nugent?
No, they actually brought them to drink the water that they had. But when Nugent got up on stage, no, because you had to have your own water and stuff.
I don't encourage throwing things. I don't condone.
Well, here's what happened.
But I could understand why somebody would throw something at Ted Nugent.
Well, Ollie, you know what? This is probably a foreshadowing, because someone did throw one. And I think it was more in like a term of like, you know, rowdy. This is when he was really young and not as crusty as he is now. And he was actually an exciting rock star back in his day. But
you know,
very
song, Joe, in 1981. I'm allergic.
Well, I know, but you're not. You have to be old and not. I'm just saying. Anyway, he was up and he was doing his thing, and someone threw one of those jugs at him. Well, I'm going to tell you what happened. Is the whole Soldier Field turned into the inside of a popcorn machine? That's what it looked like. There were jugs flying up in the air, going all the way toward the stage. I was in the back, and it was They were full. They were gallon jugs full of water. So in the end zone, I looked down and I saw a blind guy standing right out where these things could hit him, you know? So I was like, oh, my God, he probably doesn't know what's going on. I didn't see anyone walking up to him and telling him what was going on and maybe he should step back so he didn't get one of those on his head. So I walked down and I told him what was going on, and he stepped back so he didn't get bombed, you know. But I it took me a while to figure out whether I should do that or not. But I will never, you know, in the middle of this melee, this crazy free-for-all that was just the most amazing visual thing you'll ever, that I've probably, one of the most amazing things I've ever seen in my life is a whole football field full with, you know, stadium filled with popcorn balls of full gallon water jugs. But I went down and told the guy, and it took me a minute to like just say, I mean, I couldn't sit there and watch that without realizing his exposure, you know what I mean? So I went down to tell him, and that was, I don't know, that's sort of...
What year was that?
I don't even know. It had to be in the 70s. It was before Leonard Skinner had the plane crash. So,
but
I think...
But there was like a whole melee with water bottles? No tear gas?
Oh, God, no. There was no such thing. Like, no, absolutely not. I mean, this was not a day of... No. Tear gas was for Grant Park and the hippies and all that stuff. They didn't need it at shows.
Yeah, I know.
It was very. There was no police there even. I guarantee you, it was chill. I mean, this was a long, long, long time ago. Probably in high school. So we're gonna say in the 70s, in the mid 70s. So anyway. That's my story about that. So I just wanted to say, you know, that like when you see something, I'm the kind of person, and I think there's people that see people who are, you know, in danger or exposed or might need a hand, you know, and then there's people that just simply don't see it at all. They just don't see it.
And there's some people who see it, but they overreact, like, my God, that blind guy's going to hit, and they might, like, tackle them to get them out of the way. That would be bad. That would be bad. You know, just ask the guy, hey, are you aware that there's water bottles flying around? Can you help get out of the way? You know,
he was like smiling. He could feel the energy, but he didn't know what was happening. When I told him, I was like, oh, okay. And then he stepped back. And I had to leave my seat and go tell him. But, you know, I don't know why I just thought of that, but it's incredible. Anyway, we went over just a little bit. But I do want to say, you know, it's been really enlightening. And I think, you know, there's definitely an incredible dark side and a huge, you know, death. You know, we're talking about, you know, the lives of a lot of people. And, you know, when you start talking about caregivers and doctors and police and just anybody that has the ability to either help or to hurt, this is a topic that needs to be fleshed out a lot more. You're certainly welcome to come on my show and talk about it anytime, you and anybody else who wants to talk about it. And if we want to do a special show where we take questions, that would be great too. I mean, I'm open to it. So thanks so much. Thanks so much, Heather. You're awesome. Do you want to have a last word? As far as like what you could tell people in terms of
Black Lives Matter, Stop Ableism 2015.
And don't put people to death without checking their DNA.
That too. Yes. Please, you know, check the DNA. Check, if you got somebody on death row, you know, check their DNA against your evidence. You know, Bob McCullough, don't block, you know, a death row inmate from being able to test his DNA against the evidence to, you know, that, you know, could prove that whether or not he was innocent. But
right, and we didn't even get to talk about
Marcellus. That would be the case of Marcellus Williams. He's scheduled to be executed in 13 days. The judge, he sued Bob McCullough to get his DNA testing, and the judge dismissed it yesterday as a frivolous case. So we have somebody on death row who has no forensic evidence against them. Bob McCullough admitted there was no forensic evidence against them, who has asked for his DNA to be tested since 2007. And the justice system is
injustice system
have any interest in justice? You know, as many as 4% of death row inmates are innocent. There's, you know,
probably more than that.
You know, that's what studies have shown. There probably is more than that. But there's no, I have a huge problem with the death penalty to begin with.
Yeah, me too.
It's especially egregious when you've got, you know, when you could have, you know, when you know, the same prosecutor who suborned perjury and gave wrong, you know, gave unconstitutional laws to the, you know, to the Ferguson jury, the, you know, the same.
To the Wilson, the Darren Wilson, Darren Wilson grand jury, which everybody likes to call the Mike Brown grand jury.
Right,
it wasn't.
Right.
It was Darren Wilson.
It's not the Mike Brown grand jury. Mike Brown was never supposed to be on trial. McCullough put him on trial. He was never supposed to be on trial.
Right. But anyway, so we got to look, everybody pay attention to that and do something, tweet something, write something, do anything that you can about that. And because Heather's on that right now. So if you, and also if people want to look out for you on Twitter, you are at Miss Jupiter, as in the planet, 1957.
And, yeah, M-I-S-S, J-U-P-I-T-E-R, 1957.
Thank you. And also the Stop Ableism 2015, also on Twitter. If you're not on Twitter, you're sort of going to miss out on Heather here, but that's all right. You maybe need to get on Twitter.
I'm on Facebook, too, but I've been spending a lot more time on Twitter recently.
And on Facebook, it's Heather DeMian, and it's D-E-M-I-A-N. And it's separate, right? The D-E space, M-I-A-N? Okay.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, we want to make sure everybody has a way to get a hold of you. I'll add that to the show promo so people can get it. But really, thanks so much. It was really fun talking to you, even though it was hard stuff. But I'm always want to have conversations about things that need conversation, and this certainly does. So we'll be seeing you on Twitter later, and thanks again for your time.
Okay. Thanks.
All right. Bye, Heather. Well, that was a wild conversation to have first thing in the morning here, but most people listen on archive. So, listen, that was great. I really want to thank Heather for coming on and talk about ableism. I hope that our conversation helped you to understand it a little bit better and make you curious about how you can, whatever you can do or anybody can do to help change that. I want to do more on that topic. If you have any ideas, please get a hold of me on Twitter at Talkupy_radio or give me a holler at Talkupy.net. Any kind of a topic that you think needs some air, let me know, because that's what I'm here for. Conversation, engagement, all the rest of that stuff. Join us on Tuesday next week. We're going to have Damian Luzzo. He's going to be on to talk about the Utah tar sands and his action there in the desert last summer, and kind of defending climate justice and the land wherever he can go. He's a great guy, big supporter of the show in terms of giving me thumbs ups and stuff like that. Just really, Damien's great. And then we're going to have Fractivist back on to talk about how you make money in fossil fuels, because a lot of times it's not the fossil fuels itself. So we're going to have a little environmental week next week, and then we're going to hop back and have some artists in the week after. Anyway, thanks, you guys. I hope you enjoyed the show, and we'll see you on the next one. Take care. Oh, and this is Earth Guardian singing the song Peter Chang. We are all connected by the same thread. What we do to each other, we do to the web. It's time to be the change, stand for what you know is right. It's time to be the change, build a world of light. It's time to be the change and unite as one.